I call this meeting the Property Tax Division to order pursuant to Rule 10.01. The first order of business is that we need to call the roll to determine who's present. The clerk, Mr. Peterson, will now take the roll.
Chair Joaquin?
Present.
Joaquin, present. Vice Chair Gomez?
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Representative Hertas? Representative Hertas? Representative Anderson?
Anderson, present.
Anderson, present. Representative Becker-Finn. Representative Becker-Finn. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, present.
Fisher, present. Representative Green is excused. Representative Hassan.
Present.
Hassan, present. Representative Herr.
Present.
Herr, present. Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt, present.
Marquardt, present. Representative Mortensen is excused. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, present.
Pawlowski, present. Representative Torkelson?
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. Representative Hertas? Looks like he's joining right now. Representative Becker-Finn? Representative Becker-Finn. All right, there's a quorum, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. I want to note that all the committee documents for today have been sent to members and are on the committee page in the House website at house.mn under the Property Tax Division. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearings. We received no requests for public testimony today. The first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from February 9th. Representative Marquardt, Chair Marquardt, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, and I will move approval of the February 9th, 2022 minutes of the Property Tax Division.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Does anybody have any questions about the minutes?
Madam Chair, I don't have minutes comments about it, but I missed the roll call, but I'm here.
No worries. Representative Hertas is here. Any other comments about the minutes? Seeing none, we'll move to a voice vote. Members, please briefly unmute yourself. All those in favor of approving the February 9th minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion is approved and the minutes are adopted. The next item on the agenda is the approval for the minutes from a while ago. It's the Joint Property Tax Division and Tax Committee meeting that we had on June 18th, 2021, when there wasn't as much snow on the ground. Chair Marquardt, have you a chance to review these minutes?
I will also move the June 18th, 2021 Joint Tax Property Tax Meeting minutes.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Does anyone have any questions on those minutes? Seeing none, members, once again, this is a voice vote. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of approving the June 18th minutes, say aye.
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 All those opposed?
Aye.
No. The motion is approved and the minutes are adopted. Members, we are going to dive right into bills. We have four up on the agenda today, and then we're going to move on to two reports that were given to the division just for an overview. So, the next item on our agenda is House File 2300. Vice Chair Gomez, would you like to move the House File 2300 be laid over for possible inclusion in a Property Tax Division report?
So moved, Madam Chair. I'm not going to try to say that mouthful.
No worries. I do the same thing. Just say ditto. No. Thank you, Vice Chair Gomez. Representative Richardson, I see that you have a DE1 amendment. Vice Chair Gomez, would you like to move the amendment before us and then Representative Richardson can describe it?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Gomez. Representative Richardson, welcome to the Tax Committee. Would you like to please describe your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The amendment makes some technical changes that are due to statute changes that were made in 2021.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Anybody have any questions on that amendment to put the bill in its proper order? Seeing none, once again, we'll go to a voice vote. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
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 All opposed? No. The motion prevails and the DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Richardson, please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2300, as amended, would shift the classification for property owned by a community land trust and used as a homestead by the occupant. There are currently 12 community land trust organizations and approximately 1,200 homes throughout the state with this designation. Community land trusts aid in the creation and sustainability of affordable housing by taking the cost of the land out of the purchase price of a home. It keeps the housing affordable with covenants that run with the land to ensure the long-term affordability of the homes. Currently, property with this designation is classified as a 1A residential homestead property with a classification rate of 1% for the first $500,000 of the market value and 1.25% for any remaining value. Under this proposal, these properties would be classified as 4D2 community land trust units with a rate classification of 0.75%. We received a revenue estimate yesterday, and while the bill does provide a lower class rate and recognition of the covenants that run with the land to ensure future affordability, we also need to add a cross-reference to ensure that these homeowners would remain eligible for property tax refunds. I've been in discussion with House research staff, and they are working on an amendment for that cross-reference. Today, I have with me a couple of representatives from the Rondo Community Land Trust to provide testimony and to also stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Our first testifier is Jeff Corey from One Roof Housing. Mr. Corey, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you kindly, Chair Joachim and Representative Richardson and committee members. My name is Jeff Corey. I'm the executive director at One Roof Community Housing in Duluth, Minnesota. Our community land trust program serves the communities of Duluth, Proctor, Hermantown, Cloquet, Two Harbors, and Grand Marais. My purpose for presenting today will be to do a little bit more clarification about what a community land trust is, although Representative Richardson did a fine overview, and then pass the baton to my colleague, Micaiah Griffin from the Rondo Community Land Trust to talk a bit further about the bill. Community land trusts provide a one-time investment that reduced the cost of homes for low to moderate income buyers that purchase the homes. This one-time investment keeps the homes affordable for all buyers that purchase the homes in the future. Community land trust homeowners get back what they paid for the homes when they sell, plus typically about 25% of the appreciation that occurs to the home during the time that they live there. All community land trusts have the ability to tweak their own ways of preserving affordability, so that 25% number might be slightly different in different communities, but by and large, that's how we do it in Minnesota. Community land trust homeowners essentially are agreeing to pay it forward when they sell their homes in the future, which allows the price of the home to remain affordable for future buyers who also have to be income eligible. There are about 12 community land trusts operating in the state of Minnesota, ranging from Moorhead to Rochester area, from Duluth to the Slayton area, and many communities in between, including about a half a dozen in the Twin Cities area. Those community land trusts have amongst them at present about 1,256 homes as of year end. And of those homes, we've managed this resale of 632 of the homes. The average buyers of community land trust homes earn about 60% of area median income. In our community, that's depending on the household size, somewhere between $25,000 and $40,000. It's worth mentioning, I believe, that community land trusts typically serve households of color at a rate of 2 to 6 times higher than they're typically served in the market with regard to purchase of homes, which is a good thing to do in terms of trying to improve the rates of homeownership for households of color in our state. I think we're all aware that we need to do better in that regard here in Minnesota. One Roof has developed 320 community land trust homes in our history, and we've managed the resale of 200 of those homes. Our homeowners will definitely benefit from this bill, and my colleague Micaiah Griffin of Rondo Community Land Trust will now talk with you a bit further about exactly how the bill will benefit our homeowners. Thanks for your time, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Corey. And next up is Micaiah Griffin from Rondo Community Land Trust. Ms. Griffin, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Micaiah Griffin, and I'm the new Executive Director of Rondo Community Land Trust. Rondo Community Land Trust serves the City of St. Paul and Greater Ramsey County, and we've been doing so for the last 29 years. Some of the main drivers of our the reason why we believe that this bill is so important to our homeowners, and as you've heard from Representative Richardson and from my esteemed colleague in Duluth, that fairness is one of the overriding reasons why we believe this bill is so important. Currently, as you've heard, our land trust owners are now taxed as if they own a market rate home. They don't, and we've described that in two ways. One, it's the limited equity that they're able to share in. They only receive 20 to 50% of the appreciation. And as Mr. Corey has stated, each land trust puts their own kind of equity participation. And majority of those here in the state of Minnesota are at 25%. Also, as you've heard, that our buyers are limited in who can own a land trust home. And so 80% of AMI or less, and as you've heard that we are serving those at 60% AMI or less. And so those two things combined, we believe that they shouldn't be marketed as a market rate home, and they shouldn't be taxed the same way. Our homeowners have pointed out that they feel these discrepancies are inherently unfair. Then we have maintaining affordability. Our land trust makes it possible for low and moderate income homeowners to buy a home. By taking the land out of the equation and by bringing the initial purchase price down through that one-time subsidy, that's how we're able to do what we do. Sorry, I'm reading from my notes. But even though we do those two things, there's still an increasing risk that our land trust homeowners are being forced out of their homes absent any tax relief. The rising property taxes threaten the long-term affordability that we've all invested in. Every tax dollar that's reduced here, that's allowed under this bill, goes directly to the homeowner. The tax benefits are going to be 100% targeted to the people who really need them. And a few other points, reducing the class rate on the land tax properties to 0.75 has virtually no impact on other taxpayers or taxing jurisdictions. Based on some initial research and an analysis of the land trust properties in St. Paul, House research has concluded that the effect of this bill on the average homeowner's taxes would be less than a dollar. In fact, a property would have to be valued at over $1 million in order to see an impact above a dollar. We believe that this would be similar in other jurisdictions. Finally, we do have city support. The League of Minnesota Cities are on the front lines of any property tax changes, and they fully support this bill. In November of 2021, the League of Minnesota Cities adopted a specific legislative policy to support efforts by the Minnesota Land Trust Coalition to reduce property taxes for land trust properties, including expanding the 4D classification to include CLT properties. Finally, and in closing, but more importantly, rising property taxes are detrimental and harming our ability to be able to serve those at lower incomes own a home in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Members, are there any questions for the testifiers or for Representative Richardson? Seeing none, I just wanted to remind folks that the revenue note on this will change once we get that cross-reference in there for property tax refund. Sorry, we didn't get it until late last night, so there wasn't time to draft an amendment. I also want to call your attention to, now that we're starting to get more bills in committee and revenue notes, that you all get a bill summary, summary of all the revenue impact notes in a grid form. That's really nice to be able to reference to. So with that, Representative Richardson, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present the bill today. I would also like to thank the testifiers who did a great job in terms of really laying out the need for this. It's really about fairness, and I think that really sums it up, and would just ask for support. I know that you'll be holding this over for possible inclusion, so I appreciate the time, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. With that, Vice Chair Gomez renews her motion that House File 2300 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. On the next item on our agenda is House File 1661. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move House File 1661 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report? Thank you, Chair Marquardt. With that, the bill is before us. Representative Schultz, welcome to the committee. You have a bill up before us, and I see that you also have a DE2 amendment. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move the DE2 amendment?
I move the DE2 amendment.
Thank you. DE2 amendments before us. Chair Representative Schultz, would you like to briefly describe your amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Joaquim and members. The amendment, just as a technical change to referring to the facility as an assisted living, licensed assisted living facility, and then it changes the age from 62 to age 55. That is what the amendment does.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Anyone with questions on the amendment? Seeing none, if you will please unmute. Got lost there for a second. Would you please unmute? We're going to take a voice vote on the amendment. All those in favor of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? The motion prevails and the DE2 amendment is adopted. With that, I just wanted to also note too, once again, revenue note in your packet with a very small $10,000 property tax refund interaction in 2025. So with that, Representative Schultz, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joaquim and members. This is a bill that would exempt an assisted living facility in Duluth from property tax. We've requested this multiple times, and this is a facility that provides care and housing for the lowest income people in our community. And I have concerns that if they don't receive this property tax exemption, that they may no longer be able to provide these services to our very low income residents that stay there. And I do have the administrator here to testify, to talk about what makes them unique compared to other facilities across the state, and why they're requesting this property tax exemption. And I believe Scott Johnson is here.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Our first testifier, as you said, is Scott Johnson from St. Anne's. Mr. Johnson, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yeah, my name is Scott Johnson, and I'm the executive director for St. Anne's. Thank you for listening to our case for HF 1661. I will speak directly about the bill, but also to the licensing and changes that have occurred to us and all assisted living facilities during the summer of 2021 that kind of lends itself to this case. That would be chapter 4659 of the assisted living facility rules. The fact is that nonprofit property tax exemption currently does exist in the Minnesota tax code. It's statute 2020, section 272.02, and addresses the elder care community as a spectrum. Nursing homes, boarding care facilities, senior daycare facilities, and hospitals are all auto-exempt simply by their licensure and by their tax status. We're seeking to be equally valued and recognized in the Minnesota tax law. St. Anne's is an independent 501c3, much like the other entities I just mentioned. We're a nonprofit organization, and we've been serving Minnesota's impoverished senior community since the 1880s. We are a state-licensed assisted living facility, and it's just interesting to note that during the first 100 years of our existence, we had been property tax exempt. That was changed due to a law in the 1980s that moved us into some type of section of like public housing. I think with the new assisted living licensure requirements that occurred, it's maybe time for us to be moved into a different part of the law that exempts non-for-profit assisted living organizations like ours. Now, our mission directly reflects and reduces the financial burden of our city, county, and state governments. We deeply subsidize services to those of the greatest need. Our mission is evident by our policies for one, we never deny admission to our facility based on the inability to pay. Two, we never evict anybody based on their inability to pay. And three, our facility has no policies regarding the limits of the number of residents that reside here that required subsidized programs to be able to stay here. Programs such as elderly waiver, housing urban development funds, and internal rent reductions. Our dedication to mission is deeply valued in our community, as evident by all of the letters of support that we've provided. When it comes to numbers, 56% of the people that live at St. Anne's are impoverished. Their lives are subsidized by those programs that I had mentioned, including internal rent reduction, reduction in nursing service fees, and food cost. The continuation of those practices has a financial impact on our organization, right in the neighborhood of $250,000 per year. We think it really is time to act. We think that adding not only the St. Anne's bill, but the assisted living facilities that are licensed and 501c3 nonprofits to be added to the Minnesota tax bill, to the Minnesota tax language. It'd be very consistent with the history of taxation in Minnesota and the history of tax exemption in our state. Just on the terms of property taxes in particular and the impact on our facility, like Senator Representative Schultz said, this has been in front of committee a few times. Roughly in 2016 until now, our property taxes have climbed 41%. That is a significant and huge number in serving the population that we do. And I don't know where we can go to recover those kind of funds. So thank you for listening to us. I'm here for questions and answers. And I'm also joined by our business office director if there's more specific questions about our finances and numbers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Did Catherine Schneeweis want to testify, or is she just here for questions?
She's just here for questions and answers. So.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Schneeweis. Members, any questions? Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Mr. Johnson, for giving an overview of what you're doing. I do recall in past years that I believe your organization has been before the Property Tax Committee also. I do not remember, however, I was thinking about $10,000 that you're asking to have removed or deferred to other property classes. How many units are comprised of the facility that you're managing?
Sure. We are.
Mr. Johnson?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. We have a license for 167 units.
Representative Hertaus, follow up?
Okay, thank you. So let's see, how does that math work out per unit divided by monthly? I guess we're looking at, if we took 10,000 divided by 12 months, it'd be roughly $850 a month, I guess. And then if we divide that by the number of units, we're talking about a fairly insignificant amount of dollars per unit, are we not?
Mr. Johnson.
I think both myself and Mrs. Schneeweis are a little confused about the $10,000. Could we kind of clarify the question?
Yes, Mr. Johnson, I will have nonpartisan staff chime in. What it is it's a property tax refund interaction. So, Ms. Schill?
Yes, good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. Yeah, the revenue estimate focuses on the impact to the state general fund. The state general fund is responsible for paying property tax refunds to qualified filers, And what this revenue estimate identifies is the shift in property tax burden onto homesteads that would be eligible for filing for the property tax refund. So the $10,000 impact is the secondary kind of impact that would be reflected in the state general revenue budget line.
Thank you, Ms. Schill. Representative Hertaus, did you want to clarify your question?
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Schill, for that. And I did go down the wrong path with regard to the impact as a secondary cost. And that would be negligible in terms of a cost per unit. But what are your current property taxes, Mr. Johnson, that you are asking to have shifted?
Mr. Johnson or Ms. Schneeweiss, whoever would like to answer.
Yes, $113,000.
Thank you. Representative Hertaus, follow up.
All right. I think you've answered my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. Any other questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Schultz, final word.
Yes, thank you for hearing the bill again. Like I said, this is a very urgent matter, and I hope you will take full consideration of it. There are letters of support from the city and from the county. They've supported in the past as well, and they know how vital St. Anne's is to our community and to providing these services for members of our community. So I hope you will take it under serious consideration. And I know that St. Anne's is a very unique assisted living facility in Minnesota because it is nonprofit and it serves low-income population. And so I thank Scott Johnson for testifying, and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Members, with that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 1661 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. On the next item on our agenda is House File 1429. I will move that House File 1429 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Welcome to the committee, Representative Vang. I see that you have a DE1 amendment. I will also move that DE1 amendment before us. And Representative Vang, if you could explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is a simple amendment. It was introduced last session, so it just makes technical updates.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Members, any questions about the DE1 amendment for the member? Seeing none, with that, we'll also do a voice vote. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? The DE1 amendment has been adopted. With that, Representative Vang, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is a pretty straightforward technical bill. Since 2018, the Farm Bill legalized growing hemp, and Minnesota soon followed suit. Since then, we've had an increasing number of farmers growing hemp. Specifically, farmers grew hemp over 6,000 acres of land in 2021. So this bill aligns the tax classification for agricultural land use to include hemp and makes sure hemp is in the proper place of the tax code. I also have my testifier here today, Ms. Bayers, to testify on behalf of this bill, and we'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Representative Vang. With that, we have our first testifier in the bill, Joanna Byers from the Department of Revenue. Ms. Byers, would you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joanna Byers, and I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. We appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1429. Under this bill, the definition of agricultural products will be expanded to include industrial hemp. This would allow farmers growing industrial hemp to qualify for the classification of 2A homestead or non-homestead agricultural land. Minnesota's hemp production industry has changed over the last few years, but the property tax statutes have not been updated to reflect the changes. This updated definition is needed to make sure the classification of land used to produce hemp is correctly and uniformly done throughout the state. The governor also recognizes the need to update this definition and includes a similar proposal in his supplemental budget. We appreciate the author bringing this important bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bayer. Sorry about that. It's been a long day. Members, I just want to call to your attention too. There's also a revenue note about interactions between the Ag Homestead Market Value Credit, the School Bond Credit in your packet, and in property tax interactions, and then also a letter of support from the Minnesota Farm Bureau. Members, do you have any questions for Representative Vang? Great, members. All right. I then renew my motion that House File 1429 is amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Oh, actually, before I do that, Representative Vang, I am so sorry. I want to give you the final word.
That's all good, Madam Chair. I'm all for being productive and in the speedy hearing. So thank you, members, for your support. And I want to thank your time.
Thank you, Representative Vang. With that, I renew my motion that House File 1429 is amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. The next item on our agenda is House File 2810. Representative Hertaus, would you like to move that House File 2810 be laid over for possible inclusion in a Property Tax Division report?
Madam Chair, so moved.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. With that, the bill is before our committee. Representative Spudinski, welcome, and you may present your bill. I probably should have checked with Polly to see if Representative Spudinski is with us or he is in Commerce. Ms. Serfenik.
I've sent the representative a note, but I haven't heard back.
Members, why don't we... Wondering if we should move on. Do we have the folks here from the Department of Revenue? Yes. So I think members, as we wait for Representative Studinski, we're just going to roll with this and move over to.
Madam Chair, oh. I am available.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Representative Studinski, sorry about that. That was my fault for jumping.
No, sorry. If you can see, I just literally filled. I had a bill up in Commerce. I just literally wrapped that up and I heard my name.
Great. Fantastic.
Where are we at? Are you ready for me to introduce?
Yes, Representative Hertaus has moved your bill before the committee. So go ahead and describe your bill.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hertaus, for moving House File 2810. As we know, LGA is a big part of a lot of our small cities and towns across our state. And often time we realize, leadership changes. We've had stories of where mayors wake up one day and decided they weren't going to run, and the next day someone else is mayor and they weren't running. And so oftentimes small cities can run into difficulty with paperwork and whatever that might be, maybe changing an accountant or someone who else is working on their property taxes and their accounting in the city. And so oftentimes cities do run into a little bit of trouble with the timing and the personnel changes, and that's a fairly common thing. This bill just allows the city of Echo, which is a city in my district, to have an extension so that they could capture the funds due to a paper mishap so that they can get the dollars due to them to help their small city and town. So I believe we have the mayor of Echo on. I would like to maybe talk a little bit about the bill, but it's like a lot of the other bills that we see in this particular area, and we appreciate you hearing it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Studinski. With that, I'd also like to note that this has a revenue estimate of zero because the LGA was already appropriated for this. It's just sitting there. So we have Mayor of Echo Raymond Sweetman here to testify for the bill. Mayor Sweetman, will you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you. My name is Raymond Sweetman. I am the mayor of Echo. First of all, I'd like to thank you for hearing our case 2810. We went through a change in office. Our city clerk, we're in the process of changing it at the end of the audit period. So we were unable to get our audit filed in time. But since then, we have secured help from two surrounding communities, city clerks that were able to help us out and get it all done, and a retired accountant in town as well. So we were able to get it filed and secured a satisfactory audit report for the period. We have secured a clerk, are in the process of training them right now, but we ask that you give us forgiveness and allow us to receive those LGA funds that we were unable to receive in December. Thank you for hearing.
Thank you, Mayor. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Swedinski or Mayor Sweetman? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor Sweetman, how big is Echo? How many people live there?
Mayor Sweetman.
Thank you. It's about 260 people.
Sorry, Representative Hertas, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, as you can see, a small town like this is a big deal. So we certainly understand the late comings and shortcomings of sometimes late filing. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Members, any other questions? Seeing none. With that, Representative Hertas renews his motion that House File 2810 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Thank you so much for being here. The next item on the agenda is to present the VOS report. This is an annual report that we hear about property taxes across the state, and Nick Green from the Department of Revenue is here to present that report to us. Mr. Green, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Nick Green. I'm the Property Tax Research Director at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon and highlight some of the recent trends in homestead property tax burdens as presented in the latest report. I'll give a quick overview of how homestead property tax burdens are measured, talk about the role of property tax refunds and impacts on the tax burdens. And since property tax burdens tend to change gradually from year to year, I'll also review kind of historical and future trends over time as well. Go ahead and share my screen here. So first, just a little history of the report. The 2008 legislature passed a session law for the department to prepare and maintain data that compares household income with home market values and property tax burdens. We have 12 years of data and reports, with the most recent being released last month for payable year 2020. The report is commonly referred to as the Voss Report, after former Representative Gordon Voss, who originally sponsored legislation in 1987, first mandating the collection of this type of data. The Voss Report consolidates homestead data for market value, property tax, state paid refunds, and income to allow for basic comparisons of Minnesota homeowner property taxation by region and also income level. There are those numerous factors that affect property taxes, and these factors make true comparisons of property taxes among regions difficult and correlations among the data even more challenging. And I'll touch on some of these factors, move through the presentation. So let's just walk through how homestead property tax burden is measured for the Voss report. The report matches individual homeowner property taxes with their income to determine how much of a claim on homeowner income property taxes are. The database includes approximately 1.3 million homesteads statewide. As you can see from the graphic, the 2020 property tax burden is a measure of property tax as a percentage of income. The property tax is the amount of tax after any credits and refunds are applied. And the income of homesteaders includes both taxable and non-taxable income, which includes things like Social Security income, pension income, workers' compensation, among others. The Voss report also measures the tax burden before PTR is applied to analyze the impact of refunds on moderating tax burdens. And I'll provide some before and after PTR comparisons later in the presentation. So the first chart here shows the statewide median homestead property tax burden from 2007 to 2020. Starting from 2007, we can see that the median burden dropped during and after the Great Recession. You'll remember that housing values were on the decline during that period, which shifted property taxes onto other types of property. In the years coming out of the Great Recession, income growth also was relatively strong compared to property tax growth. So property taxes were consuming a smaller share of income and led to lower median homestead tax burdens. After 2014, we can see the median homestead tax burdens increasing, mainly due to home prices recovering and increasing in value, combined with higher growth in property tax levies than were seen during the years following the recession. homestead property tax burdens increased the last half of the decade. In 2020, we can see from the most recent data that property taxes still consume less homeowner income than they did over a decade ago in 2007. So this next chart here then is the same, but it layers on greater Minnesota median tax burden with the lighter blue line on the bottom, and also the metro area median with the green line on the top. You can see the trends for both regions are similar to the statewide median changes over time, and that median property tax burdens in the metro is higher than the median burden in greater Minnesota. We can also see that the difference between the median burden in the metro and greater Minnesota has shrunk over the last decade plus. In 2007, there was a 27% difference between the metro and the greater Minnesota burden. In 2020, that difference is now 18%. So one question this raises is what makes homestead property tax burdens different across the state? And so let's look at some of those reasons. So I mentioned earlier that there are a number of factors that impact the amount of property taxes paid. For a parcel, the property tax is primarily based on the total amount of local levies and its share of the local tax base. In other words, property taxes are determined by spreading the combined levies from the counties, from the city, the township, school district, and special taxing districts across all the taxable property in a jurisdiction. There are a number of factors that affect the levies and tax base. One is the level of public services provided. The level and cost of local spending varies. Townships generally provide fewer services than cities. School district voter referenda levies are not uniform. Community preferences for public goods and services vary, such as parks. So all of these are variations that make communities across the state unique and affect the amount of property taxes levied. Another is local government aid and other revenues. Communities' dependency on property tax varies based on the amount of state and federal aid received. This includes those under the purview of this division, like LGA to cities and county program aid, and also aid in other areas like transportation, human services, and education. Non-property tax revenues also may offset property tax revenues, with some examples including fees, charges for services, and special assessments. These all influence how much is ultimately raised through the property tax. Tax-based composition and property tax classification system. The amount of non-homestead property in the community will impact the extent to which taxes are paid by homeowners rather than owners of other types of property. The property classification system in Minnesota establishes the relative share of market value subject to tax, which varies among different types of property and impacts who ultimately pays. Some communities have significant business property, others have a lot of agricultural, while others are mainly residential. So it can vary between communities. And then property tax refunds, credits, and exclusion can reduce tax liability if the homesteader qualifies for various programs. And the next couple data tables will demonstrate kind of the ability of the PTR to moderate homestead tax burdens. So this table compares the median property tax burden both before and after PTR for greater Minnesota, the metro, and statewide. You can see for greater Minnesota, the median burden PTR, or before PTR, was 2.7%. And after applying the PTR, the median burden is reduced to 2.3% of income, which is a 12% reduction. Similarly, for the metro, the 3.4%, the 2.9%, which is about a 16% reduction. So property tax refunds for homeowners now total over $575 million, making it a significant source of direct tax relief for homesteads across the state. So let's look at this. This is a similar table, kind of the before and after PTR, but this time by income range. As a percent of income, the table shows burdens are greater for lower income homesteaders. And this is to be expected since the property tax is a tax on value and not income. So the PTR program, which is income-based, has a much stronger moderating effect on lower income homesteaders' burdens. We can see for the $10,000 to $30,000 income range, the median burden before PTR is 8.1%. And after applying the PTR, the burden is reduced to 3.8%, which is more than a 50% reduction in the burden. So you see at higher income ranges, the impact of the PTR is less since the program phases out as income increases. So targeting those homeowners that are least able to pay makes the PTR quite effective in making the property tax less regressive. The BOSS report uses 20 regions for analysis and comparison. The maps on this page show the 20 regions across the state and the median property tax burden for each region. The map on the left shows all 20 regions statewide, while the map on the right zooms into the metro regions to give a closer view of these areas that show up a little smaller on the statewide map. For 2020, the statewide median property tax burden was 2.6% of income. So the brownish orange colored shading is lighter in the regions that have lower property tax burden percentages and darker in regions with higher burdens. The map helps shows that the burdens vary across regions, with median tax burdens ranging from 1.8% in the Southwest region up to 3.25% in Minneapolis. So if you'll remember back to the kind of the first property tax, the list of property tax determinants, where we discussed the level of services, tax-based composition, and revenue mix, all these impact relative homestead burdens. Because of the complexity within all these factors, the report doesn't try to identify the reasons for variation between regions, only measure the calculated tax burdens. Additional detail, data distributions by regions and income ranges are available in the full report. The report could allow for analyzing smaller, but due to data privacy with the use of tax return information, producing these analyses are significantly more time consuming as they involve verifying that there are no issues with disclosure. All right, and then this last table then highlights some of the year over year changes and change trends from the most recent 2020 report. The table on the top shows the 2020 median amounts for homestead market values, net property tax, and the burden before and after PTR, while the table on the bottom corresponds to how these values changed for 2019. For Greater Minnesota, we can see that the median homestead market value in 2020 was $175,000 and $300, which was up $10,200 from 2019. And then I'll just also highlight, looking at the far bottom right, we can see that the median property tax burdens after PTR increased just under 0.1% between 2019 and 2020 for each region. The annual reports are helpful at making these types of comparisons and tracking changes over time. So looking beyond 2020, here are a few trends that could impact homestead property tax burdens in the future. Stronger home value growth has continued since 2020, with low inventories of homes for sale pushing up median sale prices. The strong price growth tends to shift additional property taxes onto homesteads and away from other property types with slower value growth than homes. With the expected increases in interest rates by the Federal Reserve, this may cool home price growth by making borrowing costs more expensive, but the supply of homes remaining relatively tight and inputs to construction remaining higher, these may keep up the upward pressure on housing prices still. Agricultural values, after double-digit growth in land values during the first half of the decade, followed by annual decreases in the second half, agricultural property values seem to be rebounding again and increasing. So the property tax shifting onto homesteads may be easing in some parts of the state in recent years. Other types of property are also projected to experience stronger growth in values, including other residential properties like cabins and rental properties, as well as industrial property, all of which may lessen the tax shifting onto homesteads. And then finally, on property tax side of things, there are numerous factors that influence local property tax levies. The federal government's response during the pandemic provided significant aid to state and local governments in attempts to soften the revenue impacts from the economic downturn. For the 2021 property tax year, growth was the lowest it has been since 2014. So the increase in property taxes were slower on all property. For 2022, proposed levy growth was up from 2021. But still slightly below kind of the average growth from pre-pandemic years. So per usual, there will be a lot to consider and monitor going forward. This just shows a screenshot of the webpage where every year the BOSS reports can be found on the Department of Revenue website. The easiest way to access these is by searching the phrase property tax burden. As I noted, the reports include additional detail and explanation which are very helpful in gaining a better understanding of homestead property tax burdens in Minnesota. The main takeaways are that regions and communities are all unique and vary in their makeup, preferences, and decisions. So there's no one factor to explain differences in homestead property tax burdens, but the BOSS report does allow for basic comparisons of income and property taxation, and also demonstrates the importance of property tax refund in reducing the property tax burden for homeowners. So thanks very much for your time. If there are any questions, I can either briefly answer them now, or I can follow up with an email response after the hearing for anything that might be a little more in depth.
Thank you so much, Mr. Green. If you will, oh, perfect. And then members, any questions? I see Representative Hurtado, you have your hands up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Green, for your presentation. I noticed most of the data seemed to reflect a reporting of 2020 data, which is largely pre-pandemic. Does the Minnesota Department of Revenue have any thoughts, or maybe you can make some comments? I know that, you know, most people know real estate taxes are paid in arrears, so you know, pay 2020 is from pay 19 and so forth. But there appears to be, because of the pandemic and kind of a renaissance in the way we do things, there seems to be a lot of pressure on commercial property, particularly office space, that there's likely going to be a fair amount of appeals and probably a devaluation of commercial property in that part of the market. This could, I mean, it will necessarily, but it seems to suggest that there would be a shift of that property tax burden onto other classes of property. Does you as a department have any thoughts or feelings about what may be coming down the pike for pay 23, pay 24?
Representative Hurtado, that is one of the things that keeps me up at night, actually, wondering what that other shoe will look like. Mr. Green, any thoughts? Do you have a crystal ball for us is basically what we're asking you, Mr. Green.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Hurtado, it does kind of early projections kind of going forward here. It does lots of value growth in a lot of different property types. So it's yet to be determined how much shifting is going to go on. If it was homestead values only going up a lot and commercial and all these others going down or staying flat, it would be significant shifting, but it does look like I did mention, you know, agricultural values do appear like they're going to go up, be going up significantly, as will other residential property. So they'll be shifting going around, but some of it will be neutralized by other value growth.
Representative Hurtado, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really don't, but I think it's something that we need to be mindful of as the property tax. I think we'll be hearing down the road increasing demand for relief from property taxes, particularly as some of these burdens get shifted to other classes. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hurtado. I think the commercial industrial market's kind of like the residential market. They're not all alike. I think warehouse is, from what I've seen in the trends, has been greatly not inflated, but growing. So maybe that will help alleviate some of that shifting too. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Green, could you give us just a brief recap or summary of my question concerns the ag homestead. We all know ag land prices are increasing substantially, and yet that cap on the ag homestead is right around that 1.8, 1.9 million mark. What's the history of that, and how is that determined, and how long will it take before we start seeing that going up as land prices increase rather dramatically?
Mr. Green.
Yep. Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, yeah, the egg cap is indexed every year based off of the growth in the market values from the previous 2 years, kind of that change in growth. So as sales now come, the assessors do the valuations based off sales trends. And so as sales are coming in and looking like they're growing, I think in the next year or two, we would see that ag cap on the homestead land start increasing again.
What is
Representative Anderson, follow up?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. What is it currently and what has it been the last couple of years? Do you have those numbers or if you don't, I can get them offline.
Mr. Green, if you have them, go ahead. Otherwise, maybe we can make sure we get them to the committee. Mr. Green.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, I don't have them right at my fingertips. They're right around that. You hit the mark about kind of that high 1.8 million, 1.9 million, but I don't have the exact amounts for the last few years.
Representative Anderson, follow up.
So if, in fact, land prices this past year, 2021, really increased, that will not show up in this Ag Homestead number for a couple of years, you're saying?
Mr. Green.
Madam Chair and Representative, that's correct.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know why my camera crapped out, but it's me. Mr. Green, this is kind of another crystal ball question, but, you know, we often talk about simplifying this very complex property tax system we have here in Minnesota. Does the department identify any opportunities for simplification, or do you just kind of go with the flow that we give you?
Mr. Green.
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, we see, you know, we do a look at the tax principles when we're looking at different proposals, and, you know, one of them is simplicity. And so there's always considerations for simplifying the tax system where you have taxes shifting, you have changes that way and impacts on taxpayers, but there's room for simplicity. I think the department's always open to listening to those. So,
Representative Torkelson, follow up.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, thank you, Mr. Green, for that. But it seems like the trend is to make this system ever more complicated. And it gets to the point where you just wonder if there isn't some way we could throw all this in a basket and figure out what's actually happening and come up with a system that has similar impact without all the complications. But that's probably a hill too high to climb. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now, Representative Torkelson, no, my thoughts are going that route too for a nice big project in the interim. I already reread the 2012 property tax working group report and started looking at some of the bills I think Representative Whelan was looking at. So you and I can chat online. Maybe we can put our heads together with a bunch of folks on that. Members? Any other questions while we have Mr. Green here on the VOS report? It really is good reading. I want to thank you so much for putting it together every year. Sometimes I have to have somebody explain it to me a little bit better, but no, very much appreciate it, Mr. Green. With that, I do not see any further questions. So we'll move on to our last piece on the agenda here. Sorry, I misplaced my agenda. Thank you, Mr. Green. Next, we have Susan Rafferty from the Department of Revenue to present the 4D report. Ms. Rafferty, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Susan Rafferty, and I am the Agency Policy Specialist for the Property Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. I am going to share my screen now. Give me 1 second. Hopefully you guys can all see that. So today I will briefly be going over the 4D affordable housing report. All right. So the 4D affordable housing report was produced in consultation with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and used data provided by all 87 counties. It summarizes the current use and history of the 4D classification to meet the needs of low to moderate income individuals and families in Minnesota. The report includes an overview and history of the 4D classification, the tax implications of this classification, the estimated impact of reducing the class rate, and stakeholder feedback. In order for a property or a unit within a property to be classified as 4D, it must meet certain statutory requirements. These include Minnesota Housing Finance Agency certification to the assessor. At least 20% of the units must meet the low income housing requirement as defined by Minnesota statute section 273.128, which states the units must meet any of the following:
receive housing assistance payments, are rent and income restricted, are financed for rental assistance by the federal government. Occupants' household income must not exceed 60% of the greater of area or state median income adjusted for family size. Rents for assisted units must not exceed 30% of 60% of the greater of area or state median income adjusted for family size. In a typical multifamily housing property, some individual units may qualify for the 4D classification, while the remainder of the property is classified as a whole, usually as 4A residential multifamily, which is typically an apartment. All right, there are two valuation tiers for qualifying 4D units. Units are valued individually, and the valuation tiers are applied on a per unit basis. The first $174,000 of value per unit receives a 0.75% class rate. Any value over $174,000 for a unit receives a reduced class rate of 0.25%. During the 2021 special legislative session, the valuation tier limit was lowered from the 2021 level of $174,000 to $100,000 for assessment years 2022 and 2023. It is estimated that 18% of Class 4D value currently in the first tier will qualify for the second tier under this change. In this table, you can see the breakdown of 4D units by year and how many of these units qualify for the second tier. And if they do qualify, what percent of their value falls under the second tier? So in assessment year 2020, there were 2,149 multifamily residential properties in the state that had units that qualified for 4D classification. Of these properties, 449, or 21%, received funding from a local program to qualify units for 4D classification. Local programs range from programs that fund new construction to programs that help owners meet the criteria for providing low-income rental units. The table breaks down the number of 4D units for each funding type, and most of the units that received some sort of local program funding fall under column 4. In assessment year 2020, just under 80,000 individual housing units received 4D classification. Preliminary data from assessment year 2021 shows the number of qualifying 4D units increasing by approximately 5% to 83,968. So all 87 counties in Minnesota have 4D property. The Class 4D net tax capacity, or NTC, is less than 1% of the total tax base in 86 counties and is 1.2% in Ramsey County. However, 4D property represents more than 2% of the total tax base in 45 of the 405 cities that have 4D property. For additional information regarding these cities, please check out the appendices to the report. So in 2021, units receiving the 4D classification paid $75.5 million in property taxes. This table shows the taxes paid by 4D housing units and again is broken down by funding type. By classifying these properties as 4D rather than 4A multifamily residential housing, the properties paid 40% less in property taxes. The report also looks at the number of units in tax increment finance, or TIF, districts. There are currently 375 parcels that are in whole or in part classified as 4D and located in a TIF district. This represents 11% of all 4D parcels. Approximately half of all counties have some 4D parcels located in a TIF district. The 4D properties located in TIF districts paid approximately $13.4 million in TIF tax increment for payable year 2021. It's estimated that 4D properties would have paid an additional $10.3 million in tax increment if their classification was 4A multifamily residential housing rather than 4D low-income rental housing. Of that additional $10.3 million in tax increment, 84% of it would be for properties located in the 7-county metropolitan area.
So any changes to the 4D class rate will impact the property's net tax capacity and their tax burden. If the 4D classification rate was changed to a single tier rate of 0.25%, it would reduce the statewide 4D net tax capacity from $35.5 million to $18.3 million. These reductions in tax base would lower the share of property taxes paid by 4D property, and that would mean that other property types, such as homesteads, would pay a higher share of property taxes in areas that contain 4D property. The impact of a potential change to the 4D class rate on property taxes paid by homesteaded properties would vary between communities. The property tax burden on individual homesteaded properties is dependent on several factors, such as the mix of property types in the community. As the table shows, the average dollar change for a residential homestead net property tax would be $17 statewide, $25 in the Seven County metro area, and $8 in Greater Minnesota. So for additional information and detail, including letters from stakeholders, you can find the 4D Affordable Housing Report on the Department of Revenue website under Property Tax Reports or by searching 4D Legislative Report. I am happy to try to answer any questions. Otherwise, my contact information is listed below. And if I can't answer anything, I will definitely get you that information. And I will stop sharing my screen.
Thank you, Ms. Rafferty. Members, does anyone have any questions on the overview of the 4D report from the Department of Revenue? As a reminder, like Ms. Rafferty said last session, we asked for this report. I kind of wish we would ask for a few more things, but some of the stuff we need to know, we're not going to hear for a few years. But we also lowered that first tier from 174,000 down to 100,000, so almost cut it in half, and blinked off the inflation for 2 years to see what that would do. So was wondering if members had any questions on any of the presentation Ms. Rafferty gave us. I think I have, I actually have one. I think I know the answer to this, but just to clarify. So the changes we made last year with the reducing the first tier and taking the inflation off, when will we see the results of those? Because I know some of that will shift onto other properties, but it lags behind, right?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually going to defer that question to Nick Green if he happens to know.
Mr. Green.
Yeah. Madam Chair, the changes are going into effect for assessment year 2022, which is this year, and that'll first impact property taxes paid in 2023.
Thank you, Mr. Green. That is exactly what I thought, but just wanted to confirm. Members, any other questions? Everybody's quiet today. With that, thank you, Ms. Rafferty. Thank you, Mr. Green, for going over both the VAS report and the 4D report. Those are available online on the Department of Revenue website, and I believe we also attached them in our documents for today. So members, I wanna thank you for your time today as well. Next week, we're gonna be hearing several bills related to tax increment financing and lodging tax. So with that, members, we are adjourned.